Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, I want to give you an update on the latest chapter in the Lea Thomas controversy. She's the transgender swimmer for the University of Pennsylvania. Things are now getting even more interesting. Apparently, there are swimmers on the Penn women's swim team who are not happy with Lea being allowed to compete, her own teammates. And USA Swimming has suddenly changed its guidelines as to who can compete in the national championships that come up in March. More on all this later on in the hour. It's quite a saga. But first up, I want to ask you a basic question about the state of sports parenting. Now, we all know that sports parenting has become incredibly complicated these days. I mean, there's so many decisions that moms and dads have to make about their youngsters, and they get very little guidance as they try to make these choices over those critically important young years. Whether it's deciding what sport or sports your child is going to play, whether they should try out for a travel or a club team, how do you decide which travel team to try out for, whether a kid really needs to specialize in just one sport, and on, the questions and challenges are endless. In short, when you, as a parent, decide to go down this pathway with your youngster, you have to know it's going to be tricky and at times a very, very difficult process. And again, there are very few guidelines. So here's my question. How in the world did we get here? And what are the underlying reasons why? Now, as you know, I often refer to sports parenting and how it was back a generation or two ago when kids who enjoyed sports simply went outside and played pickup games. There were no parents involved, just kids playing touch football or soccer or basketball or baseball. And true, some of this kid-driven activity still continues to this day, but certainly not to the extent that it used to be. I mean, back in the day, every neighborhood had youngsters playing pickup games of one sort or another. It wasn't until usually high school that a kid's involvement in sports became more organized and structured, and quite honestly, it would usually involve the coaching by an adult at that point, usually a coach at the school. I mean, I can vividly recall that my own father came to see me play in a game when I was in the fifth or sixth grade. It was just a local youth league baseball game. And I recall that game because I don't think my dad or any other sports parent ever came to watch and observe any other games until me and my buddies were, probably in the ninth grade, freshman or high school. Again, that wasn't upsetting or unusual. It was just the way it was. Parents had their own lives. And yeah, their kids were out playing ball on their own. But as we know, these days, it seems that any serious sports parent is already out working with their 4 or 5-year-old, getting them introduced to the basics of each sport. By the time the kid is 5 or 6, the moms and dads are already lobbying to make sure their kid is being recognized as a rising star. At 5 or 6. We know how organized youth leagues work, where parents volunteer to coach the teams, and then they sometimes go through various draft procedures to make sure that they get the best talent for their own kid's team. This is obviously all well documented. And then, of course, everything escalates from there in terms of local travel teams, select teams, club teams, and on and on. Tryouts of these teams have become very, very nerve-wracking. Everybody gets much more tense as to whether or not their kid is going to make the cut. This is not fun. It's totally contrary to the whole idea of kids playing sports because they're supposed to be having fun. But I can still recall, you know, as a parent myself, watching my youngsters try out for teams. It was very, very difficult to watch and observe. So my question is to you today, why has all of this happened? Why have we allowed youth sports to become so pressurized, so competitive, and so challenging? Is it because of the awareness of how much money a top professional athlete can make? I mean, we know the top athletes at the professional level, they make millions upon millions upon millions. Is that what's driving the American obsession with sports parenting? Or is it because we as caring parents simply want the very best in life for our youngsters, including sports, and if that means having to drive them to numerous practices and games each week, well, that's the price we have to pay. And speaking of a price to pay, of course, all these various sporting activities that our kids are involved in, yeah, we all know those cost real money. Or is there a deeper motivation at work here? That parents feel such pride in their little one being seen as a star on the rise that the mom and dad want to, in effect, show off their youngster among one's friends and peers in their community. Something like akin to a modern-day kind of conspicuous consumption. Yeah, that's my kid. My kid just made this elite travel team or club team, and your kids obviously didn't. We're showing off our kids. Is that what's driving us? Again, these are the kind of questions I want to ask today. I want to reframe all this as why, how have we gotten to this point when it comes to youth sports, and what is the next step beyond this? Because that's what I'm really concerned about. And I want to get your calls about this at 877-337-6666 because I think we have to talk about what is going on. Other possible factors. Is it all about college being the end goal for our kid? Now look, many, many sports parents tell me that they realize that the chances of their youngster going pro, well, that's a wonderful goal, but it's very unreachable. But those same parents do believe quite firmly that their young star has a real chance of perhaps earning a full or partial college athletic scholarship. Or at the very least, if the kid's a top athlete in high school, that will very much enhance their chances of being admitted into a top college. Now, even though the same parents who acknowledge the chances of their kid going pro are slim, when you say to them, you understand that less than 4% of all high school varsity athletes ever make a team at any division in college, they hear that, but they sort of assume that quite honestly, their kid will be one of those top 4% of the athletes who go on to play in a college situation. They just aren't being realistic. Now look, here's the bottom line. Sports parenting today involves a huge commitment from moms and dads. And honestly, if you have more than one athlete who competes, well, the element of time and money, that becomes even more overwhelming for moms and dads. Let's talk about this. I want to know how we got here and what's going to happen next. Because why? How have we allowed ourselves to go down this pathway? Remember this. Our kids didn't make this happen. We did. 877-337-6666. Sure, I know the expression of parents like to say, oh, I love to see you play. That's wonderful sentiment. I get that. But is that the real reason we flock to our kids' games and have them playing sports, endlessly? Or as I recall, my late colleague and friend Bob Bigelow used to say that parents love going to their kids' games simply because it's, quote, a relatively inexpensive form of adult entertainment. I got to tell you, that song, which we hear every time we go to a sporting event for kids, Major League Baseball games, back when we had Major League Baseball, if you recall. I mean, put me in, coach. Kids want to play sports. They enjoy playing sports. That's what the fun is. They enjoy being in the game. And that's what I'm beginning to get worried about, that we're seeing, you know, these concerns with youth sports and all the emphasis upon competing and making travel teams and club teams and so on and so forth. I worry about the fun being basically squeezed out of all this. That's what we're talking about today, because I'm worried about how we went from a generation or two ago to a situation where now, we're seeing fewer kids playing sports. It's as simple as that. They're either just deciding early on, if they're not going to be a star, I'm not going to play, or they're just going to do something else with their spare time. It's a worry. And the real question is, what happens down the road in 5 years from now or 10 years? The next generation, the Gen Z kids, are they just, what are they going to do? Are we basically, have we got to the point where we've made it so challenging, so time-consuming, so expensive, so emotionally fraught with our kids, are they just going to say, enough, we're not doing this anymore? 877-337-6666. Again, we've seen so much change when it comes to amateur sports in the last few years. I worry about all this impact it's going to have on our kids. Let's get to our calls, because I am curious to get what you think about this. Let's start with our friend Ed Ward over in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. Well, I wish it was baseball season, but right now it's cold.
Yeah.
But here's my point on this. I think on a lower level, okay, there's too much commercialization with all these big-time tournaments and all that stuff on a younger level. Why not play in form leagues where you know you play on the weekends when there's school, and then when school's over, now maybe you could play during the week also on that. And yet everyone's more interested about playing games, but we know we don't do enough of, Rick, to make players better. We don't practice enough. Everything's about, oh, we got to go to this tournament, go here, go there. And then that's not where you get better. You get better with practice and all that stuff. And you know what? The good coaches that are out there, no matter what level you play at, they always say that they like being at practice teaching the young men or ladies how to play the game. And like I said, at the younger level, it's getting too commercialization. But, you know, and yet on the older level, yes, you know, basically we're going into events now, because hopefully you're looking to play college baseball. I mean, that structure has changed and all that stuff. And it's amazing how travel baseball has killed, and I know myself and I'm sure you play, American Legion baseball, where you just went and played, you played good competition and enjoyed the game.
You know, Ed, it's funny, you mentioned about the concept of practice, and I think that, you know, a lot of parents today, they sort of don't understand how essential, as you pointed out, practice is. That's where the good coaches know the real progress is made, where real instruction, real encouragement, coaches taking the time to explain to a youngster how to master a skill or how to try this or try that. That's where all the so-called positive action takes place in getting that kid to the next level. The games themselves are fun, and they're sort of seen as, like, they should be seen at least as a kind of reward for the kids just as they're progressing. And of course, the parents these days like to obviously watch the kids play. But the balance of too many games and too few practices, that doesn't work. I mean, it's the practice sessions where the kids really enjoy having a chance to interact with their friends, their peers, learning things from the coaches, and getting a sense of how they're going to get better. And I worry about the fact that we see more of these tournaments, more games, but I think that costs to the kids in terms of actually learning the inner parts of their sport. You know, I think,
Rick,
that's a real concern.
It's amazing. I mean, I'm actually starting to look at our events for fall events for the travel team I coach. I'm looking, some tournaments are starting the first weekend in March. That early. I'm like, are we kidding?
Yeah.
You know, that first weekend in March is usually when you start practice for high school baseball in New Jersey. I mean, you know, how about we have a plan of playing tournaments in the best weather possible instead of parents going to a game?
Well, more than that, how can you have tournaments in March when you have kids having a chance to go out and practice and get back into shape and know what they're doing? It's just, I'm telling you, we're sort of losing control of all this, and I think that's the worrisome. We're reaching a tipping point where we may just see all these sports, all these travel programs and competitive sports go to a different direction, and that's not good for our kids. Ed, thank you as always for the call. Let me move on. Let me go to Rich in Island Park this morning. Rich, good morning. You're next up on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
I'm well, Rich. How are you doing?
Good. I just want to convey my experience as a parent of I have one son that's playing Division I golf, and I have another son that's graduating high school who played baseball and football.
Okay.
And I just want to say the very big difference that I noticed is when you have an organization like MetPGA and AJGA that are run really, really well, that have the interests of the kids at heart and provide a real structured program
mm-hmm.
for kids, it makes a huge difference. And you have baseball and football, which is basically unorganized, in my opinion, unorganized, and you have all these people out there trying to take from your child and trying to make money off your child, and it's all basically, you know, a mess. It's a huge difference, in my opinion. And I look at it like, yes, parents are always going to be very enthusiastic and pushing their kids, and there's going to be problems with that. But if there was a better organization, if Major League Baseball or the NFL really got interested and involved and created a real youth organization, frankly, like they have in golf. Golf is very impressive. The MetPGA around here is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
The youth program that they have. And then you have the AJGA, which is, you know, closely aligned with the PGA. When the kids get better and they can play in that nationally, and it's so well run. And they really, it's not all about, there's not people trying to make money off your kids all the time. It's a huge difference. So, I mean, I think that going forward, if the Major League sports teams, sports leagues, sort of did what the PGA did, it'd make a huge difference. That's based on my experience.
Rich, let me ask you this. Is there any, for the younger golfers with the PGA, are there any fees that the parents have to pay for the kids to be part of that?
Yes. I mean, there are some fees, but it's modest. And here, you know, in New York, they have a whole tournament schedule, and it's very modest. But, you know, the honest truth is, when you take the next step and you compete at the AJGA, which is a national program, it does involve, you know, traveling, and costs are involved, you know. So it is definitely, you know, there are some costs involved. But also they have scholarship programs, and there's a lot of children that participate who are basically, get a lot of money from the organization.
Right, and
it's not run for profit, you know. So it's not run for profit, and they're not in it to make money. So.
That's the key here, and you know it's funny, and we know. I mean, every year in the springtime, I'm always scratching my head with, in particular, Little League baseball. You know, kids who want to play Little League baseball have to pay a fee to be in the team, and I'm always aware of the fact that Little League baseball makes a big deal about the fact that when they have the Williamsport tournament, that everybody in Williamsport is a volunteer and gives their own time without getting paid. And I'm thinking, yeah, but Little League Baseball is getting paid millions and millions of dollars by corporate sponsors, by ESPN. So somebody's making money somewhere there. Why don't they just take some of that money and give it back to the youth leagues and baseball in towns to help on the fields or to help out with the cost of kids playing on those teams? Or whatever it be. I just, yeah, unfortunately, and I'm not, you know, trying to pick on Little League Baseball, but that's really what goes on here. All these programs, money becomes the common denominator, and you sort of wonder, you know, again, this is why for you, and Rich, thank you so much for the call. I worry about the fact that, you know, we always talk about in the show about having a commissioner of youth sports, some individual at the national level who can oversee all this. Because honestly, it's just as I say, it's the wild, wild west. Anybody can do pretty much what they want to do. And there are a lot of gullible moms and dads who think this is the best route for their kid to take. And, sometimes it doesn't have a happy ending. Let's move on. Let's go to Ken up in Yorktown, New York. Ken, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good, Ken.
I coached college basketball for many years. And I have a son who literally from the day he was born had it in front of him. And I coached him in youth sports after I left coaching in college. He decided, he didn't want to play college basketball. Great. I have another daughter who is a Division I lacrosse player, but what I've seen throughout the years, and just to give a perspective, I don't think I have an answer for this, just that it really just was so disappointing to see so many parents who really don't know anything about sports just be so, all they want to do is kind of live their lives through their kids, and it really turned me off. And a lot of times when I had parents talk to me about their kids and what level they can play at, what do they think? And really, it was just something I always told my kids before every practice and before every game was, I'd hold up two fingers and I'd say, guys, remember the two things? And they say, I know, Daddy, play hard and have fun.
Right.
And that's really what it's about. And, when I coached my son in travel, I didn't run tryouts. I didn't care about going at AAU Nationals or anything like that. I handpicked kids that just, it was very clear it was all about having fun. And unfortunately, what we see everywhere, and forget about when they're in high school and these big AAU programs, even at the lower levels, the parents, and I do respect the fact that they're giving their own time, but they're coaching basketball. They're not basketball coaches. And there's so many nuances and things that can be taught on a day-to-day basis when you practice about helping these kids with everything, not just skill-based stuff, but life stuff. And it's just so lost in the shuffle because, to be honest, in the bottom line is I think parents are ruining youth sports. And it was back in the day when we all just went out and played and we reffed our own games. And, it all worked out. And I think now it's really a shame to see what we're seeing on so many levels, whether it's money-driven, status-driven, or whatever it may be, and the kids are not just out there just to have fun. And I appreciate what you're doing and making people aware. And again, I don't have an answer. I just wanted to shed a little commentary.
Well, Ken, you're very eloquent in your commentary, and I very much appreciate it because, and the fact that you've been there yourself as a college coach and have had your own kids go through sports as well, I think that is significant as to how you adapted and have now gotten to the point where you're saying, we're just sort of out of control here. And as Ken said, he doesn't have an answer, but that is troublesome. And as I said, I'm concerned as well, and I think parents today should be concerned. 877-337-6666. Let's continue. Let's go to John in Dutchess. Hey, John, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning, Rick. Rick, I'm going to start off with this. In the commercialization end, basically, the parents are willing to pay. So part of the problem is that when people are willing to pay, you're going to have that situation. So now you've got to ask yourself, why are they willing to pay? Because there's a generation of parents now that they think if their kid is smart, it's because of them. And it isn't. It's because whatever you believe, the person was made like that. The kid's got an athletic body, or is a great athlete, it's because of me, the parent. That line of logic got to go. It just got to go. The next thing is, everyone thinks that their kids are the greatest. All right? I get criticized because, my daughter was a stud, but my son was a grinder, and I'll say it. There's no harm in that in saying it when kids are playing sports. And then the next thing you get is, I teach judo. When I was coming up, my father would sit there, watch, and be quiet. Now, I got to repeatedly tell parents, look, be quiet. And then they all want their kids to be all-stars, in like a month. Well, I'm having them practice at home hard, this and that. You know, and when my kids were younger, we didn't have a judo school, so they did taekwondo. The parents would say, I take my kids out in the summer because, you know, taekwondo is an indoor sport. They'd say, oh, how come you're taking them out? It's going to take them more time to get black belt. I said, so that they go get some fresh, you know, weather. Follow what I'm saying? So at the end, no, it is what it is.
John,
with the parents, you got to start with the parents.
I
tell you this. Listen to this, Rick. With the cheering on this, you know, my instructor would have thrown the parents out. But you can't work like this in this day and age. I tell the parents how one a boy at Iowa lost the national title. He got distracted, looked at a clock. I told the parents how in wrestling, me, a black belt in judo, told my son what to do. I got him pinned. And it didn't help.
Let me stop you there. I hear you loud and clear, and you really have sort of crystallized where we are today. The parents, we know the parents, and thank you for the call this morning. The parents are the ones who are, again, they're conflicted because they want to be so involved and they want the very best for their youngster in sports, whatever sport it might be, whether it's, you know, it's taekwondo or basketball, whatever. But the problem is they don't have any guidelines on how they should be behaving or how to interact with the coaches or with the kids at the events. And that's why we have all these constant reminders every week from the headlines of parents who are, you know, attacking referees, coaches, verbally abusing people from the stands. It's just wrong. And yet that's where we are. That's as simple as that. And again, these issues really didn't exist 20, 25 years ago because the parents weren't so involved with their kids and their kids' sports activities. Let's move on. Let's go to Art in New Providence. Good morning, Art. You're on the fan. Oh, I think we have lost Art, but I just, you know, Art, are you there?
Hello, Rick.
Art, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, good to talk to you. How you doing?
Good, Art.
Listen, I'm listening to my good friend Ed Ward, of course, and the things you were talking about with practice. And, you know, I think practice is the greatest thing in the world. I've coached high school basketball here in New Providence, and it's my most enjoyable time. All the kids are involved. When it's game time, I don't have to worry about, you know, kids being upset about not getting in, things like that. But it's really the best time to have. And, you know, I have the book about Kent Washington right here in front of me because I went out and bought it as soon as I heard him, Kentomania.
Yep.
And you know, I haven't started reading it yet, but when I first heard about it, he went out and I can save these parents a lot of money. Just go out and tell your kid to practice and work on your game as much as you can. If you really want to be a good player, go to the courts, go work on your game. He worked full court by himself, working on his game, work on your shooting, work on your dribbling. And they don't have to go to all these places. Like I have kids, I work on their shooting with them and I work on them 15 minutes. And I feel like I get them to a point where they have the good form and they, you know, their shot's pretty good. And I said, but now you got to keep on working on it. You know, put in an hour, put in 2 hours, put in 3 hours. You don't have to go to all these places. Just work on your game. And I have a kid now who's at Seton Hill University, Division II. When I heard about Kent Washington, I thought about him. He's 5'9". He's playing. He doesn't come off the court. He's a sophomore. He would be at the courts 5 o'clock in the morning. I'd go take my walk around the high school track. I'd hear a ball bouncing at 6 a.m. I said, I know it was him. I'd see him later. I go, I heard you bouncing the ball. He said, I've been there since 5 o'clock in the morning. And he from grade 7, when I first knew him, he wanted to play college basketball. But he didn't do all that. He did some of the stuff because you have to. But he worked on his game. And I have kids that have worked on their games and become very good players. And it's not going to some showcase or, you know, having a personal trainer. Just go out there and work on your game.
Art, you know, I mentioned last week, I believe, talk about the difference between professional and amateur athletes and the fact that it's really a matter of consistency and that the top players, the pros, do things with their skill level that are much more consistent than those that are amateurs who occasionally will show that flash of ability but aren't able to reproduce it on a regular day-to-day basis. And that's what you're talking about here with, you know, kids today or with Kent Washington and his wonderful book, Kentomania. And how he realized, I'm 5'8". If I want to keep playing basketball in high school and in college and maybe play pro ball, I just have to work on my skill, my craft all the time. Too many athletes today, as you well know, as you're just talking about, too many of our kids today, they work at it, they sort of master that skill, or they think they've mastered it, for a half an hour, and then they figured, well, that's it, I'll go out and do something else. But the other kids who stay hungry, they just keep practicing and practicing and practicing, so it becomes sort of like an automatic part of their existence in terms of course I can make that shot, of course I can hit that free throw, of course I can do that crossover. But very few kids pay that kind of price, and they just sort of assume as long as they keep making travel teams and keep getting to the next level, they're going to be fine. But that's not what happens. At the end of the game, the great, great athletes are the ones, as you just said, are the ones who really practice at this all the time. And that's the key, and that's what kids today really need to learn and be instructed about.
Yeah, and just to, you know, go a little further with that, you know, one of the things that I really bugs me a lot is, I sort of tell our kids it's during basketball season, you should be, you know, fully committed to basketball. We go like 6 days a week. We just played 3 games this week. We played yesterday. I say, take that Sunday off, rest your body, rest your mind, physically, mentally. And they're out, they're out doing these, getting ready for their next season, you know, all the time. It's always they're getting ready for the next season. Well, you're in season. To me, whatever season you're in, you should be doing that. If you're playing a sport, you should be concentrating on that season. You shouldn't be getting ready for the next season. And if you want to get ready for the next season, then don't play this season. Go get ready for it if that's what you want to do.
That's of course, a legacy. And Art, thank you so much for your call this morning. That's obviously a legacy from back in the day when kids played 3 sports in high school at the varsity level, and they played their sport according to that season. Nowadays, all the sports, it seems, all overlap. They all interchange. They all seem to go from one to the next. And it gets to be difficult for a kid to keep up with all the demands on his or her time in terms of what sport is the top priority in their life. And again, from the coach's perspective, the basketball season, so you should be focusing on basketball. You can worry about baseball, lacrosse in the springtime, but right now let's just focus on basketball. It's so difficult and so complicated, and it's particularly hard for parents who don't have any real background in sports to try and find, you know, a way to guide their youngster through competitive sports at the amateur level. I just think it's difficult. All right, look, our time is limited, but I do want to talk about this Leah Thomas case because it's getting very, very interesting. And again, she's the transgender swimmer at Penn who competed as a male for 3 years for the Penn men's team and was, he was good but not great. But now that she's transitioned to being a woman, she's been dominant in her freestyle events for the women's swim team at the University of Pennsylvania. And she's been doing all of this, by the way, by strictly following the NCAA and Ivy League rules on transgender athletes. But now with the league, the Ivy League and the NCAA championships coming up in a month, the rules are suddenly changing. And I want to tell you about this, and on the other side of the break, we'll come back and talk about this. I want to get your thoughts and comments because you make your own determination as to whether or not this is being fair to this young person. 877-337-6666. Just a quick reminder that I always ask you to check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com. You'll find all sorts of resources there for sports parents, everything regarding books on the topic. There are blogs that I write about these topics every Sunday. Talk about there's also podcasts of the shows. It's a really good place to go if you have questions about sports parenting. And of course, you can check me out and follow me on Twitter at Ask Coach Wolf as well. We have talked about this Leah Thomas transgender case a few times on the show in the last year. It is a fascinating case. It's a complicated situation. Everybody wants to have, hopefully, a reasonable solution to the situation. But just when we think we've covered all the various parts of the puzzle, something else happens in this case, and that's why I want to talk about it this morning one more time, because this is not resolved yet, and there is a new development, and I want to get your thoughts as to what you think, if this makes sense, or if this make any change in your evaluation of how this swimmer should be allowed to compete or not. I think, let me just do this, because I think it's, I don't like to quote at length from a written publication, but in this particular case, it's a nice little capsulization of what's going on. This is from the Washington Post last week. Quote, 16 members of the University of Pennsylvania women's swimming team sent a letter to school and Ivy League officials asking they not take legal action challenging the NCAA's recently updated transgender policy. That updated directive has the potential to prevent Penn swimmer Leah Thomas from competing at next month's NCAA championships. The letter indicates that 16 other swimmers believe their teammate should be sidelined. In other words, there are teammates of Leah Thomas who've basically written a letter to Penn saying, we don't think that she should be allowed to compete. Now, Thomas, who, as I mentioned, is a transgender woman who swims for the Packers women's team, competed for the Penn's men team for 3 seasons after undergoing more than 2 years of hormone replacement therapy as part of her transition. She has posted the fastest times of any female college swimmer in 2 events this season. The letter from Thomas's teammates raises the question of fairness and said she was taking, quote, competitive opportunities away from them, namely spots in the Ivy League championship meet where schools can send only about half of their rosters to compete. The letter reads, we fully support Leah Thomas in her decision to affirm her gender identity and to transition from a man to a woman. Leah has every right to live her life authentically. However, we also recognize that when it comes to sports competition, that the biology of sex is a separate issue from someone's gender identity. Biologically, Leah holds an unfair advantage over competition in the women's category, as evidenced by her rankings that have bounced from being ranked as a male at number 462 as a male swimmer to being number 1 as a female swimmer. And if she were to be eligible to compete against us, she can now break Penn, Ivy, and NCAA women's swimming records, feats that she could never have done as a male athlete. Now, in other words, this letter is from her own teammates, is saying that they fully support her transition to becoming a woman. They have obviously no issue with that, but they don't feel it's fair for her to compete against natural-born women. And in effect, they're saying because she's so dominant now as a female swimmer, that she's taken away slots for her teammates to perhaps compete in the NCAAs. Now, okay, as of right now, under just revised USA swimming rules, Leah would not be allowed to compete for Penn in the upcoming national championship meets. These take place in mid-March, not that far off. And that being said, there's still a lot of back and forth at the national level on the rules and who is allowed to compete. As I said, this is unbelievably complicated. Let's talk about this, 877-337-6666, because this is just a mess, and there's even more complications to this. USA Swimming, which is, of course, the national governing body for swimming in this country, it just changed its policy regarding transgender athletes. And I have to tell you, after wading through the new policy, what I find more than a little disconcerting is that in the bottom line of this, transgender swimmers have to maintain low levels of testosterone for at least 36 months if they are to compete. Now, critics have pointed out that no other national or international sport governing body has required more than 24 months of low testosterone tests for trans female athletes. So, I mean, why 36 months? Well, maybe it's because Leah Thomas is on record on having gone through 34 months of low testosterone testing in her transition. Or in other words, she's 2 months shy of the new USA swimming mandate. Is there a conspiracy going on here? I don't know. That's beyond my ability to make a judgment. But I have to tell you, it's just getting very, very difficult to watch all this, because clearly this woman, Leah Thomas, has transitioned. She's been super competitive as a female swimmer, and now we have a situation where we're looking at, in terms of her own teammates, a lot of her own teammates have nicely said, well, we don't think it's fair because of her being on the team, she's costing us her own chance to compete in the Nationals. And now USA Swimming has changed its policy, saying, well, you need to have 36 months of clean tests. And, of course, this woman only has 34 months of clean tests. And, of course, all the other experts say, well, other sports, when it involves transitioning athletes, it's only 24 months. This is just so strange. I don't understand what is going on with this. And the other thing that I want to point out is apparently this letter that came from the swimmers on the Penn team, apparently they didn't sign it. They didn't sign their names to this letter. That strikes me as a bit odd. And their spokesman, Nancy Hogshead Maker, who back in 1984 was an Olympic swimming gold medalist, she's the CEO of a firm called Champion Women, which is a women's sports advocacy organization. She is on the record as saying that they were afraid if they signed their name, these swimmers would be retaliated against, that they might get kicked off the team, or maybe down the road they would never get a job offer if they spoke out against Leah Thomas being included in women's swimming. It is just so bizarre to me that we've gotten to this point with sports today that I just don't really know, you know, where we are. And I just to put this in the right framework, this is all going to happen. The competitions in the Ivy League, the NCAAs, happen in a few weeks once we get into March. Will she be allowed to compete? I just don't know. I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows at this point. But I gather it's now up to, I believe, the NCAA, which obviously Penn is a member of, as to where we go from here. It's just so strange as to how this is all playing out. Now, again, the other part of this, too, there are a number of states in this country, I think the last time I checked, about 10 of them have already passed laws which basically say that when it comes to competing in high school and in college in their state, you have to compete according to the gender you were born with. Makes no difference if you had transitioned. You have to compete according to the gender you were born with. Simple as that. That's the only way you were able to compete in high school or in college. Oh, yeah. This is just getting so, so bizarre. Let's take some calls about this, because I want to see everybody else feels about this as well. Let's go to Ralph in Manhattan. Hey Ralph, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning. You're getting backlash, Rick, because it's just flat out not fair. Now, you can take away every social relevance of this issue and just look at these women's plights, and they're facing a person who's biologically a man, and you can't get around that fact no matter how the social norms change, no matter how we see things differently in this day and age. It's flat out unfair to these women. And behind the scenes, Rick, you notice that they're coming out in droves, protesting this, because it's just not right, and it's just not a level playing field.
I hear you, and I understand both sides of the issue on this. My question is, why would you do it now? If you knew this was forthcoming, why not say, okay, starting next year, we're going to change the rules? Why do you have to do it like right now, when all of a sudden everybody are scrambling in the middle of the swim season to figure out how we're going to do this? It's just, I find the timing to be very, very poor. And maybe it's because people didn't realize that Leah Thomas was going to be a dominant swimmer. If she had not, let me ask you this, Ralph, do you think if she had just been not been a factor on the women's swim team this year, she was just average, do you think anybody would have cared?
I think some would feel uncomfortable, locker room and this type of thing. And again, when you talk about this issue, it's very controversial. You got to have guts to talk about this issue. That's probably why not many people call on this issue. It's difficult to say the truth. I think that if she was a non-factor, as you mentioned, I think the backlash would have been far, far less. But nevertheless, Rick, I would say that if I were in that woman's shoes where I was competing on the level of that and I was going about my business and saw this person come on board with an obvious advantage, I would feel shortchanged drastically.
You mean that people, the women on the team now who are saying, well, all of a sudden this new teammate comes in, she's a phenom, and then her role, she's so good that since the Penn and every school is limited as to how many swimmers are allowed to compete in the nationals, that she's going to take my spot, and that's not fair.
Yeah, it's very, you know, you're talking about a very competitive thing here and working hard to achieve these goals and getting very good in your given sport, and suddenly something is thrust on you like this. You're going to find that women, after they test the waters, Rick, see, when they see that others are coming out, they feel emboldened to come out also.
Yep.
And then when they do that, you'll see more and more and more. It's kind of like the when you see a sexual allegation and one woman comes forward, a second one comes forward, and then they're emboldened to come forward in greater numbers. It kind of goes along those lines. When one person sets the precedent, the others follow.
The question is going to be, and Ralph, these are good points, good observations. I think the ultimate question is going to be here, who is going to make the decision? Is it going to be left to a lawsuit? Will the Supreme Court of the United States have to make a decision on this? Will it be left to the states, individual states, the legislatures? And again, as I mentioned, there are at least 10 now that have already passed laws or have executive orders saying this is what we're going to allow and what we're not going to allow. It's somebody somewhere has to step up. Again, not to sound like a broken record, but if there were a commissioner of youth sports or a panel of experts, it'd be nice if that existed, but we don't have that right now.
Well, do we want political correctness on this issue? Do we want to feel good and make everybody happy, or do we want to do the right thing? Because, frankly, had it been my daughter and she was facing this, I would be very upset because it's just flat out, forget the obvious ramifications socially, it's just flat out unfair on the playing field, regardless of sport. Whatever sport you're talking about, you're at a distinct disadvantage if you play as a biological woman against someone of this ilk.
Yeah, and at the core of all this, of course, is sports about being fair. Everybody wants a level playing field. And obviously, this is what we're discussing here and debating it. And I just don't know what's going to evolve on this, but I do know that we're going to have to make a decision soon. Somebody has to make a decision soon at the highest levels if we want to make sure that our kids understand that, yeah, we want to be fair. We also want to end up in a situation where, if there's going to be a situation with transgender athletes, maybe as we talked about earlier in the year, talk about having just a separate category for transgender athletes like they have for Special Olympics or for Paralympics. I don't know. Hey, Ralph, thank you for your thoughts as always. Appreciate the call. Friends, this is going to be a complicated issue, and as I said, I don't know how it's going to get resolved, but we do want to get some resolution soon, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out with Leah Thomas at the University of Pennsylvania as she continues to march toward the NCAA championships. It's going to be interesting. Okay, that's it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks, as always, to Ed R. Zuman. Please stick around for NFL Preview. That's up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.